Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
You're very welcome back to what Fionnuala Jones has just described as the end of days version of Movies and Booze. It does.
Well, yeah, it's like that out there. Nobody had nothing out in the streets.
What
a
way to go.
Absolutely. It's about 28 days later.
There's just lots of Americans walking around. I mean, it's very early in the year for them to be here, and they just, there's nothing, everything's closed.
You know? I saw a group of them outside Trinity College this morning staring at the doors are closed.
Oh, my God, it's like Good Friday all over again.
Yeah. And there's very few people outside in News Talk, and it's just, it does feel like end of day.
Yeah,
but we're in here and we have alcohol.
Absolutely,
so,
most important.
Things won't be bad. I have Jean Smullen with me in studio. You have the wine.
I've got, I'm looking at trends, what people are going to drink in 2025. This year has started. Let's have a look at what's happening in the drinks industry.
To be on trend with your wine.
So yeah, I mean, well, I've got a super new wine, which is called Traces, and it's low alcohol, it's sustainable, it's no sugar. And again, that's a very big trend at the moment, and it's all about the be kind to yourself sort of philosophy is what they call it in America. And people are just, the big trend, I think, which is happening in the United Kingdom more than here is that the mid wines, which are only 7% alcohol by volume, that's a lot to do with their taxation regime because they're changing how their taxes are. So they now have a new thing called mid-March, which means you just drink an alcohol with 7% ABV in March, and then you're practicing mid-March. So we have dry January, mid-March, and then sober October. So the Lexian grows.
Sober October.
Sober October is another one. Yeah.
We did dry November this year.
Yeah. Well, most people in Ireland, we tend to do dry November.
Ready for the season.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Get fit.
Yeah.
So wines then kind of keep pace with all the stuff that's kind of fashionable in society.
There are like trends. I mean, the outliers are all the new grape varieties that, people have never heard of this. People are getting much more adventurous in terms of exploring grape varieties and the sort of grape varieties they're looking for to try. And, you'll have the Marks and Spencers, for example, have a fantastic new range where they've got all these lovely new grape varieties that are lesser well known. And, many of the supermarkets are sort of exploring that now. And that's kind of a big trend where people are looking for something new.
Okay.
A move away from your Cabernets, your Merlots, your Sauvignon Blancs, let's try something new. So like everything, there are trends and fashions in the wine industry. Yeah,
very good. And what's your second one that we're going to?
Well, the first one, actually, I'm going to try this one. This is a fun one. This is the it's a Massey Dacta. It's the Red Tractor. It's a Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand. It's brand new to the market. And the man who makes this wine, Ben Glover, he drives a Red Tractor. So in honour, because he grew up on a farm, like any child who grew up in rural Ireland will know what Massey Dacta is. It's the name of a tractor, right? So the wine is called Massey Dacta. And so I thought it would be fun to feature this one. And it's New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. And we love Sauvignon Blanc.
Brilliant. Bring it on. Not quite yet, but bring it on. And Olivia Fahey, we have two movies today.
We do. So we have one of the Oscar frontrunners, which is The Brutalist, where it's basically set in post-World War II, post-Holocaust sort of time, where a Hungarian architect has now been let out of a concentration camp and he has emigrated to the United States and how he's trying to set up his new life there. Like I said, Oscar frontrunner, it earned 10 nominations yesterday. So, well, we were talking earlier that it also has been embroiled in some little bit of controversy as well, which we can get into later. And our second movie is Back in Action. It's the new Netflix hit. Oh, I don't want to say hit comedy, but it hasn't really gone down too well. Hoping it was going to be a hit comedy. Yeah. And it is starring Cameron Diaz back in Hollywood again, acting for the first time in 10 years, alongside Jamie Foxx. And really surprisingly, because I totally missed this memo, Andrew Scott is in it as well. So, yeah.
I've seen it.
I saw it too. I loved it. I was grateful.
Yeah. Thank God for Netflix. You get to see these things before.
I know, yeah. I, for me, it was one of those ones where I can see what they were trying to do, but I think they kind of missed the mark a little bit.
Right. And as is already named the slide, the item today, End of Days, Fionnuala Jones on entertainment as well.
Fionnuala. Yes.
Speaking of the Oscars, you wanted to take a look at more of the snubs end of things.
Yeah, because I know there was discussion yesterday about the nominations, obviously when it came out, but people have had time to reflect, decompress and look at the categories a little bit more. And there's some interesting omissions, I would say. Wicked obviously picked up, I think, a lot more nominations than I think people thought. I think it was 10 nominations in total. But John Chu, the director, shut out of the director's category. So we had Michelle Yeoh saying that this week, that they were crying, all crying tears of joy for all the nominations they got. But they said they were also crying on behalf of John M. Chu because he was shut out of that category. Someone else notably shut out of in the Best Director race, Denis Villeneuve for Dune 2. Again, Dune 2 kind of underperformed, especially in comparison to the prior film. I think Dune 1 got 10 Oscar nominations in 2022, Dune Part 2 only getting 5. Josh Brolin, really not happy about that, says it thought it was very strange. He actually said it makes no sense to me that Denis Villeneuve wasn't nominated. Also, I think a lot of conversation around challengers and challengers being shut out of the categories. Now, I will say, I think the only category that it was like definitive shot out of was Best Score from the Nine Inch Nails guys. Their names are escaping me now. Because
Trent Reznor
and Atticus Ross. Exactly. It's incredible score. I think they should have gotten a nomination there. Kind of baffling why it didn't. I don't think it should have been nominated in any other categories.
I don't know, challengers. That's
the sexy tennis movie? No? Where were you for that? Because that was...
Where was I?
Oh, Tom, we had a big summer with sexy tennis. Let me tell you. Let me tell you. But like it was
sounds like I've missed a lot.
It's Zendaya and a few other people. Like it was grand, but like it was very... I didn't think it was like anywhere near as sexy as it was kind of made out to be. But there's some conversation around that it was maybe shot out of the acting categories. I don't really think so. I think it was definitely shot out of the score category. But everything else, it was fine.
Especially considering they won Best Score at the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
So you'd expect them to at least have gotten a nomination.
Very odd. Very odd. That was the only glaring one that I was like, yeah, that's a bit weird. And obviously, of course, Kneecap for Best International Feature. Of course, of course.
That is kind of disappointing.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like I was like waiting. And like they put in such a good stead, even in terms of like marketing the film and like being really out there. It's just... It's a shame because it is just such a good film.
I absolutely loved it. Yeah. It was really brilliant. And I'm disappointed. What I've heard is that it was an Elton John song that kind of came from nowhere.
And sure, they were shot out of the music categories as well. But I don't know. Weird. But they're on to bigger and better things. They're just announced a 3-arena gig, which is going to be absolutely rammed. Good luck getting tickets for that, I'd say. Yeah. But
back in cinemas today as well.
Back in cinemas today.
A film you should see in cinemas.
Yeah, definitely. If you're kind of on your... I know this technically hasn't been nominated for an Oscar, but if you're going through your list of things to go see and you haven't seen Kneecap yet, go see it. It's brilliant. It's really, really good.
Brilliant. So yeah, and they also managed to kickstart the interest in the Irish language as well, which is spectacular.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Right. Do you want to tell us about Charlie XCX? Because I'm a bit in awe of her, and the more I hear about her, the more in awe of her I am. So what's the latest string to her bow?
So she has been connected to a lot of acting projects. I feel like that's what she's going to do next in terms of trying to follow up Brat, this gargantuan album that she had last year. I think she always kind of does the unexpected as opposed to, like, I don't think she wants to make another gargantuan album. I think she wants to focus on film and projects and stuff like this. So we got news this week that she's teaming up with A24. She's producing and starring in a new movie called The Moment, which is based on her own original idea. Based on that title, I'm kind of thinking, are we getting like pop star film about someone who's been kind of grafting and grafting and grafting and then suddenly has this moment and completely ascends? But we have no idea about plot. It's being kept very much under wraps. It's being made by Aidan Zamiri. He's a Scottish photographer and filmmaker. It's his directorial debut. He wrote the screenplay for Birdie Brandes, which is not something that I'm super familiar with. Very interestingly though, A.G. Cook is actually doing the score. So A.G. Cook is a longtime collaborator, Charlie XCX, big hyperpop producer.
Okay.
Really, like, he's... I watch out for that because I think that'll be really, really good. And also it's under her own production company, so I think that's definitely what she's eyeing. So I wonder, could we see future Oscar nominee Charlie XCX?
Performs the songs, brilliant image, brilliant concept. Wrote this, her own production company.
Yeah,
that gives a rest.
I'm obsessed with her.
Take
love
a break,
Charlie.
Please,
it's Charlie, baby. It's Charlie's world. We're just living in it.
I need a glass of wine after that, I'm afraid.
Okay, we're going to start with the tractor wine, which is the Massey Dacta, and you can't miss this because there's a red tractor on the label. This is the 2023 Massey Dacta Sauvignon Blanc, and I chose Sauvignon Blanc because it's the number one most popular grape variety that people like to drink on the Irish market is Sauvignon Blanc. It outsells every other grape variety. Second is Pinot Grigio, and Chardonnay is in third place. And New Zealand is the sixth most popular wine, and it's simply because New Zealand is a small country and the global demand for their wines are so huge. There's just not enough of it to go around the world. So if they made more wine, they would be a number one place all over the world. But it's just that there is a limited amount available. Yeah. And I mean, Marlborough, which is where this wine comes from, is complete. There's no more planting place available in Marlborough. So, you know, but what people love is the style, which is that lovely kind of aromatic, that tomato leaf and asparagus nose. And then it's kind of got a lovely sweet fruit characteristic. And that's sort of very much a definition of the Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc style. And they use a specific yeast culture to, you know, to give that particular flavour and style to the wine. So, but it's a wine that has a great following in this country and people just love it. And there are a lot of Sauvignon Blancs on this market. But I thought we'd have a look at this one. The Ben Glover, as I said, is the name of the man who makes it. The Glover family vineyards are in Dillon's Point, which is a sub-region of Marlborough. I remember flying into Marlborough in 2016 and you come in on these small planes and the whole thing is covered in vineyards. And there was an elderly couple on the flight and I'm not a bit of a nervous flyer, especially when it's those small prop planes, right?
Rightly so.
And I got that from Auckland down and I was like, oh gosh, I didn't expect to see so many vineyards. And the woman said to me, oh, well, if you'd been here 25 years ago, it was all apple trees and sheep farms, sheep, and I want them back, she said,
wow.
Right? So, I mean, this such is the success of Marlborough Sauvignon Blanc. So, as I say, it's planted to the max now, you know. But I thought I'd choose this one because this is what we like to drink. So if you smell it, you get all the lovely sort of aromatic Sauvignon and then that lovely acidity. That's the key to that. It's fresh, it's zippy, it's acidic. And while we're on the subject of New Zealand, if you like wines from New Zealand and in fact from New Zealand and Australia, for the first time, there's a trade wine fair that happens every year. And it's on next Monday in the Alex Hotel in Fenian Street. And, you know, the trade come in and they show the new vintages and it's, you know, invite all the key customers from the restaurant trade and the off-licensers are invited. But in the evening, we usually open it up for the consumers. So tickets are on sale at the moment. You get them on eventbrite.uk if anybody's interested. So the consumer portion is on from 6:30 to 8:30 in the Alex. But we always get a great turnout of that. And people come along because they love the wine style. And this year, there will also be some Australian wines there. So there's about 50-50. We usually have about 23, 24 producers. So about 15 of those are going to be Australian. So if you like Antipodean wine, that's a place to come along. But I think this is a lovely example. And again, when you're talking about wine trends, people tend to get a bit snobby about wine. I mean, Oz Clark said that New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc was the wine that wine snobs love to hate. And it's true. But it's like anything. When it's popular, people buy it and they like it. And everybody can get it. It's so boring. But it's a very popular wine style. So
it's delicious.
This one is a nice one. Massey Doctor, the Red Tractor. Yeah.
What are we all making of it?
End
of days panel.
Very savoury.
Fresh, fresh, lemon, lovely, juicy,
juicy,
Thumbs up all round
absolutely,
for that. Excellent,
absolutely.
We're loving that. Massey Doctor, which is a tractor, really. We're going to have a quick break and we're going to come back with our first movie. So what is our first, what are you going to go with?
Oh, we're going to go with The Brutalist, I think.
That's the one that's the one most Oscar nominations and we'll talk about it after this.
It is no coincidence that fate brought us together on the eve of my mother's death. I'm good at reading the signs.
Sir, I do not know what the commission entails.
We'll talk about the details at home, but you'll be well compensated. And also, you'll be given a place here on the property to live and work. I think that residing here will allow you the time and the space to conceive of it properly. And your family, should they arrive, they're welcome here too. What do you say?
I would like to draw something and present it to you.
You'd like to win the commission. All right, you can do that. It's cold. Let's return inside. Come on.
So that is a little clip from the hotly tipped The Brutalist. Are you making of this?
So this, it's a very, very tough topic. Like, let's just put that out there straight away. It's not something that you're going to be sitting there kind of like laughing your ass off throughout. You're going to sit there, you're going to feel uncomfortable, you're going to be kind of drawn into some of the character development. But because it's 3.5 hours long, And then you have to add on a 15-minute interval on top of that. And then you factor in, like for the general public, you also have to factor in the ad time at the beginning as well. You're basically blocking off nearly four, like more than 4 hours of your evening or your day to go and see this film. So there is that kind of element of, okay, we get the point of this now. Can you move on to like the next bit? But it drags it out just that little bit too long. So I do think it could have done with a bit of a tighter edit. It sits in the uncomfortableness, which I don't think is a bad thing necessarily, but overall, while I can appreciate that it is still a good film, I didn't particularly enjoy the cinematic experience, shall we say. So it's a really hard one for me to actually review because I'm very conflicted by it.
Okay. It seems like the Oscar committee isn't conflicted at all.
Yeah, it's 10 nominations, which again, having seen it and appreciating it for its artistry, yes. And like the performances were absolutely spectacular. Like Adrian Brody, it's kind of odd that he's found this little niche for himself that he could potentially win his second Oscar for essentially playing another Holocaust survivor, which is very odd.
So weird, like, isn't it?
Like if I had a nickel for every time it's happened, it would be two, which is still more than you'd expect it to be. Felicity Jones is also nominated. She plays Laszlo's wife. We've also got the director is nominated. I think the script is nominated. It has like a slew of them. And it is all quite deserving. Now, there is some controversy with this as well, though, because it came out, it was either around the time that the voting for the nominees was closing or just afterwards, that AI had been used in some of the post-production. So the director released a statement and he basically has clarified as to how much of it was used. It doesn't look like it was actually that much. So the post-production team used this app called ReSpeecher. Yeah. And they use that to kind of fine tune some of the Hungarian language that's used throughout. So both Adrian and Felicity, they did work with a dialect coach and they did deliver their lines. And then in the post-production process, as they were kind of fine tuning the audio, they used this re-speecher to kind of finesse some of like the vowels and the pronunciations just to make it more pleasant to like native Hungarian speakers to hear. And basically he said like that was it. He was like, it was more of a way to make the sound operators their jobs easier as opposed to like just letting AI do their job for them. He was like, it was a tool that helped them do their job better as opposed to taking over. And then he also refuted claims that because there's a series of architectural designs and pictures in the epilogue of the film, and he refuted claims that they were also AI generated. He was like, no, our team worked tirelessly on that. Yep. You're all hand drawn, so you can go F off with that, essentially. So because it's come out so close to the Oscars, like all of the nominations for the SAG Awards had also just come out, and because it's after the SAG strike, which was so like heavily involved with all the AI replacing people's jobs in the industry and things like that, there has been some worry from some people that maybe The Brutalist should be disqualified.
Wow. That's very... God.
Yeah.
How do you go from a tiny bit of AI, which sounds like a process you do in a sound studio just to make the vocal sound better, and those generated images, I've heard about them. That's like if you wanted a clipboard of somebody as a child, I know I've heard about this, that if you want to find the photograph of that person, it takes weeks, whereas AI can do that in half an hour. And it's only in the film for a second.
Yeah,
why would you not do that?
But the thing is, those images were actually hand-drawn, so they're not AI'd at all. But people were just like saying that they were online. So he's refuted those claims. And then for like, I was thinking earlier, and people have said it to me as well, they're like, how different is it from them using ReSpeecher for the Hungarian dialogue? How is that any different from using auto-tune for a
singer? Exactly.
And that's kind of where the discussion is kind of opening up. So personally, I don't think it should be disqualified. But if in the rule book it says that no AI should be used, then that's where the gray kind of get a bit complicated.
And that could see, at the moment, Adrian is the favourite, isn't he, in the Oscar nominations?
He is the front runner, but I do think that the fact that Sebastian Stan has now been nominated for The Apprentice, he was the other person who won the Golden Globe Award, because of course they split the Best Actor categories there. Now, he won it for A Different Man, which was the other film that I thought, well, if they are going to give him a nomination, it'll probably be for that one. But the fact that they've gone for The Apprentice, I think that's such a big middle finger to their new president, Donald Trump, because he, like Sebastian Stan had spoken out about how he was disappointed that his peers had not publicly lauded his performance, but they were texting him and telling him in private how much they enjoyed it. So the fact that he's now gotten the nomination, I think that's kind of him getting his flowers, and they could even go as far as actually giving him the win as well. So,
right. So is Timothée Chalamet not in the running here now?
Personally, like, I know a lot of people are saying yes. I personally think Adrian's performance is better. I also think Sebastian Stan's performance is better. I also think Colman Domingo's performance is better. So for me, Timothée is probably fourth out of five.
I have a fiver on Timothée.
Sorry about that.
He's still a bit too young, I think, from the Academy's perspective. I think they're kind of thinking, not your time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you think about it, like Adrian was 29 when he won his first Oscar, and he's, I think, still the youngest to have won an Oscar in the best male, best lead actor category.
Now,
so
I think Timothy's the youngest ever two-time Oscar nominee after James Dean was the last one.
All the more reason to give it to him if you want to bring in that young audience. Is all over. I only got odds of 5-2 on it, so I'm not going to buy a car right out of this. Here's one for you. This is interesting. A text in from James. Best picture and two acting nominations for Wicked really shows what a joke the Oscars is now. It used to be based on merit. Now it's a mixture of 33% merit, 33% wokeness, and 33%.
Yawning, I knew that would get you.
The amount of people that use the word woke around me don't actually understand how to use it properly or what it really means. That's how I feel. So people who just use woke for things that they don't like, that is not how you use the term woke.
Yeah, if you don't like Wicked, that's absolutely fine. But that's, I better
read the rest of
And
33% trying to profile big blockbuster films to try and get the young people interested in the Oscars again.
Well, I disagree, because I've been interested in the Oscars since I was like 9 or 10. So like I've always been had interest in it. I know a lot of young people who have interest in it, even when it was kind of going through a bit of a lull in terms of really bad hosts, not very engaging ceremonies, things like that. So I disagree that they're trying to get more young people to watch it. I think they're making an effort to make it just more widely available, because that's been more of an issue of cable TV versus streaming.
And just very quickly, your marks out of five or marks.
So I give it 3.5 because, like I said, it's like it's one that I can really appreciate. And also, the first half is much better than the second half as well. The second half, the tone kind of changes. There's a few kind of scenes in there where you're kind of going, oh my God, I would not have expected something like that after seeing what I saw in the first half. So again, a little bit conflicted. I didn't enjoy the experience, but I do think it's worth going to see because it is a really well-made film.
Okay. Thanks very much for that. Now, Jeff Buckley possibly being in a movie. And the miracle here, Fionnuala, is that he hasn't been in a movie really before this.
I found this story kind of interesting. So there's a documentary coming out about Jeff Buckley and his life. And there's coverage of this in Variety, and this story with talking to Jeff Buckley's mother, Mary Goubert. And I just found it interesting because basically people have also been trying to looking to adapt this story and make a biopic of Jeff Buckley's story and everything like that. And Brad Pitt was like one of the people who was mad courting the story, like really wanted to do it, really wanted to be involved, really wanted to play Jeff Buckley. So much so to the point that like he was bringing Jeff Buckley's mother for lunch. He invited her to his wedding to Jennifer Aniston. Such was the desire to make this film. But inevitably she was like,
how do you say no?
Yeah, how do you say no? Oh girl, Mary, I'm like, go to the wedding. But also as someone who's currently planning a wedding, I'm like, you know, Brad Pitt was more flahoolock with the money, because we're like going through the list with a fine tooth comb being like, would we pay for their dinner? I digress. She said at the time, you know, if there's 20 people calling you and Brad Pitt is one of them, who are you going to pick to go see? And she's kind of laughing, but she said inevitably it was like she couldn't get over that Brad Pitt didn't look anything like Jeff Buckley. It was like, you were going to dye your hair, put brown contact lenses on, those baby blues, and you're going to open your mouth and Jeff's voice is going to come out. They stayed in touch, but like obviously nothing ever.
So did she kind of kick it to touch?
A small bit, yeah. She ended up getting in touch with a documentary maker, then director Amy Berg. She's done West of Memphis and the Oscar animated Deliver Us from Evil. She was in touch, and she basically she wanted to move from non-fiction to like she wanted to do a biopic, a fictionalized version of it. But again, the mom was feeling a bit weird, said she wasn't really sure about it. But when she did allow access to her archive and her son's story and stuff like that, they made this documentary, which is actually premiering at Sundance. I think it's today. So it's called It's Never Over, Jeff Buckley. Now, Brad Pitt is still executive producer on it, so he is still involved in some ways. Might be one to look out for later on in the circuit. But when I read this story, I was like, they did a Jeff Buckley biopic before, and I don't know why they're not like talking about it. Basically, it went nowhere. It's called Greetings from Tim Buckley, and it kind of follows more the story of Jeff Buckley dealing with the legacy of his father and his father's death. Penn Badgley was in it. People know Penn Badgley from Gossip Girl and You. No one saw this. It made like 11 $11,000 at the box office. Right. But apparently, very good. So maybe if you're interested in that story, it might be worth seeking out over the weekend. I have no idea where it is. I'd be very interested if any listeners have seen it and could recommend it. But yeah, just kind of light bulb moment in my head thinking, they have done this before. And from what I remember of seeing the pictures of it, he actually really looked like Jeff Buckley as well. So
very interesting. Yeah. I have to say now, that'll be a short enough film. Because Jeff, he's one great album under his belt and then sadly dies before the second album.
A very short life, yeah, but there's so much like mythology around him and even regretfully so about his death. So I do still think it'll be kind of interesting to see what they do with it.
Yeah, and one of those artists that we adored in this country long before they kind of occurred from around the rest
Absolutely.
Of the world.
Beautiful.
So, well, I look forward to seeing it. Sounds great. Right then, we're over to wine number two.
Okay, wine number two. Now, the first thing I'll hold up the bottle. Of course, we're on radio. You'll see it says A11%, C78S, and there's no capsule, you'll notice, on the top. This is S sustainable. C78 means 78 calories. And A, as the alcohol is very prominently displayed, 11% ABV.
Wow.
This is a rosé from Provence. And this is all about, you know, lower alcohol, sustainable wine, which is very much on trend.
Are they just doing that themselves?
That's their own label. That's their thing. Now, many, many years ago, I was in La Ciotat in south of France, sitting in the village, eating rustic fish stew and drinking rosé. And about 7 years, that was 1999. And that was very much the sort of wine that you would expect. You know, it was very rustic, but it was very ordinary, pale pink rosé, and nobody really knew very much about it. But 7 years after that, a wonderful guy called Sacha Lachine, who came from Bordeaux, he had a mission. He wanted to kind of put Provençal rosé on the map. And he created the biggest trending wine in the world at the moment, Whispering Angel, right? And one of the big things about that wine was that it was with virtually no sugar in it. And that's why when, you had all the movie stars out in the Hamptons taking pictures of themselves drinking Whispering Angel, because there was no sugar in it. So obviously lower calories and, you know, so this became a trending wine. And then, you know, Whispering Angel became this phenomenon, right? So, you know, Traces is kind of, evolving from that, right? And I mean, it's a wine, a Vin de Provence, you know, it's very much aimed at Generation X or Generation Z, who like use social media and they like to take pictures of themselves, you know, sitting in the sun, drinking a rosé wine, or, you know, it's all about lifestyle, right? So this is what we call a kind of a lifestyle wine. And, you know, it is lower alcohol by volume. It's, you know, part of the better for you, they call them in America, range, right? There's no sugar in it. So it's very much on trend. Now, in the range, there's a Sauvignon Blanc and there's a red, which is made from Sanso. The red was okay. Sauvignon was actually quite good. But I actually like, of the three, I like the rosé the best because I think it has got that kind of nice dry finish to it. So it's Traces Grenache Rosé. It's exclusive to Tesco at the moment, but I'm guessing it will go more mainstream. And these styles of wine are certainly going to become much more popular. It's a very pale pink rosé, as you can see. The nose, you've got like nice sort of floral notes. And then when you try it, there's that nice,
really nice,
dry, very elegant finish to it, you know. And only, you know, the ABV is lower, so that's, you know, so you're drinking less alcohol. So,
I'm drinking myself to a slimmer, happier, more balanced me.
Basically, what it is, it's you know, if you want a glass of wine that has very, you know, lower sugar content and lower in alcohol, this is a good one to try.
It's very nice.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
And it's a nice wine. So that's one of the trends, as I say, along with new grape varieties. And even in the reds, people are moving away from the heavily oaked, big, kind of full-bodied reds. People are looking for Pinot Noir. They're looking for Beaujolais. They're looking for lighter styles reds. So it's all about, like, the trend in wine for 2025 is all about lighter styles, lower alcohol. That's very much, you know, going to be where the wine business is going to go for the next 12 months.
That's a French wine, is it?
It is, from Provence.
Right, because I was very taken by how the New Zealand wines seem to be just going through the roof. And French wine's not so much so. Sure they aren't.
France is in a great crisis at the moment. Yeah. You know, and I mean, there's an awful lot of problems and the people are drinking less and, you know, the people have this image of France as a wine drinking country and the younger generation in France aren't drinking wine anymore. And, you know, so, you know, there's a lot of family businesses. You've got to remember the people who make wine are farmers, and the farmers who are growing the grape to make the wine, they're very much reliant on people buying the product. And if there's a big move away from
sure.
consuming alcohol, then they're not going to be able to sell their agricultural product, and
yeah.
then they're going to be financially in trouble. So a lot of wineries are going out of business in Gosh. France at the moment.
New Zealand, they're running out of land.
It's very much that the wine is on trend, and it's a style that's
yeah.
very, very popular on a global basis,
yeah.
you know.
Very good.
And I mean, French wine is terribly popular all over the world as well. But it's just, if there's a definitive style, which is of Sauvignon Blanc, which is what New Zealand yeah. produces, then there's going to be a market for it. And, you know, so this is France trying to create a market for a wine style that people would drink. And yeah. I think people will drink this. Yeah.
It's delicious. We have just time for our second film. It's on Netflix at the moment, isn't it?
Indeed.
As well?
Indeed. Back in action.
Let's take a listen to it.
What is going on?
We were operatives for the CIA.
Like Jason Bourne?
Yeah, but we remember stuff.
Yeah.
I knew you guys were lying about something. I never thought you were cool enough to be spies.
I mean, that's not why we're cool.
Yeah, that's not why we're cool. Wait.
So, we're still talking wine there. That's on Netflix at the moment.
It is on Netflix now.
And it is the return of Cameron Diaz.
The return of Cameron Diaz. And do you know what? I missed her. I'm kind of glad to see her back in action, but because, you know, like when I look back at a lot of the films of the noughties that I really enjoyed, she is in,
yeah.
I'd say, like 80% of them. So she was such a massive star for her to just be able to like step away. She was just like, yeah, I went, like had my family, was like loving life with my kids. And then, you know, Jamie Foxx came a-calling and I said, okay, why not? I'll come back and do this. So whether this is going to be a massive return and she's going to be banging out like a film a year now remains to be seen, but she's kind of like, oh look, do you know what, I enjoyed it, and if another one comes along then, you know, maybe. Spoiler alert, the film does kind of end with a kind of open-endedness that there could be a sequel, so whether she'll return for that or not remains to be seen. We'll have to wait to see if Netflix actually commissions one first, but yeah, it's a fun little action caper with some really cool action sequences. I have to say, like, the fight choreography was kind of reminiscent to that freshness that you saw in the likes of Kingsman and the likes. So it was really, really well choreographed. So you're like really invested in enjoying the spectacle and the dance that is this fight choreography. And sorry, I'm just after remembering a scene in my head, hence the giggle. But overall, it is definitely one of those films that it's kind of like you could be scrolling on your phone and not really paying attention and you won't really have missed much. They do kind of like explain everything a little bit too much throughout.
Yeah.
And the big reveal,
the
big reveal that they save until, like, say, just before the last act kind of kicks off is so unbelievably obvious that I was just there going, when are they going to confirm that's the thing? When are they going to confirm that? There it is. Okay, cool. Now I can move on and start trying to enjoy the rest of the film.
Yeah. Did you enjoy it?
Overall, I did. But it was definitely one of those things of I could see what they were trying to do. And because there were a few little moments where I was like, oh, no, like you shouldn't have done that. Oh, no, like that's really way too cringe. Oh, did we really need that big, massive product placement, even though you didn't name the brand, but everybody knows which brand are advertising a fit ring at the moment. Like there was these kind of moments that you just get really frustrated by it. But I will say the runtime, it's just under 2 hours. So that's a yeah. definite plus. And it is just something kind of fun to put on while you're at home with a glass of wine like yourself,
yeah.
Jean.
Yeah. I watched it last Saturday with a glass of wine. I loved it. I thought it was
we
great.
We watched it
yeah.
and loved it too. And I'll tell you things we loved about it. Their chemistry, we
yeah.
thought
yeah,
was great.
The chemistry was good. I will say though, like poor Andrew Scott, he really got like the short end of the straw
did
on
a bit.
That. They were really trying to hammer home the fact that his character is really obsessed with Cameron Diaz's. And you get the point very quickly.
Yeah.
And then they do it again, and then they do it again, and then he's like looking longingly at a picture of her in another scene. And you're like, no, we don't need it that much. And also, maybe it's just because I've just seen him use his Irish accent so much now that when he was using the British accent, it wasn't really landing. Like Glenn Close's, as much as like she sounded like she was chewing marbles with her British accent, it still worked better than
she's
his
great.
Did.
I mean, she
was
totally
really good.
Goes over the top
with her little
right?
with her little
yeah.
toy boy as well.
And, yeah,
he
yeah.
recognized from
there was
Barbie.
Another thing really appealed to me too, and it seemed to be a little bit of Modern Family kind of chemistry going on. that they're two spies, two CIA, they kill you with their, you know, flick of the of a wrist, and they can't take the phone off a teenage girl like this. I'm not going in there. Forget it. That's never going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was all great. I was loving all
like
that.
There were certain bits with the kids as well, is that like as much as they were trying to say how smart their children were, they were also ridiculously stupid. So you're kind of just like, I get that you're children, you don't understand the gravity of the thing and the whole thing of like, stay off the internet or they might find us, and you're there like Googling with using your handheld video game console of no brand name that we'll share. But it is just one of those things of they were trying to say how smart they were, but then also showing that they are also very stupid. And it was that kind of like contradiction that didn't, I was like, they're either one or the other. I'm sorry.
All right. I enjoy. Give it marks out of five, please.
2.5.
Oh, that's very harsh indeed. Now, my
word. It's 50%.
To get the girls together, and we need Charlie's Angel 3.
Yes, that is what we need.
Drew is up for it. Lucy's up for it, girls. Get in a room.
I like the sound of that. So, listen, Fionnuala, things to look forward to. White Lotus coming back for season 4 already confirmed.
Yeah, season 3 isn't even out yet. It's coming out February 16th. So, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? I'm not really sure. But yeah, early renewal, production night for 2026. No idea where it's going to take place. Obviously, this upcoming season is going to be in Thailand at a Thailand resort. Natasha Rothwell is returning. She played spa manager Belinda Lindsay. She's the only returning cast member that we know of so far. As we know with White Lotus, it's kind of all to play for. We've no idea, but we know creator showrunner Mike White has put ideas forward to HBO as to where season 4 will be set and like what's going to happen. Okay. So
seasons 1 and 2, you have to say, was some of the best TV of the last few years.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I feel like people are not as gone on season 1, which I agree with, but I do still think it's worth the watch. I think season 2 is stronger and it kind of fully gets into its groove. But I think Connie Britton is so funny in season 1. Sydney Sweeney as well, as the on the subject of teenagers kind of being insane. Incredible. Chef's kiss. Definitely catch up if we're stormbound in the weekend.
Oh, I think if you haven't seen White Lotus, get on that really as quick as you can.
It's really, really good.
Amazing.
Really good.
We need the name of the rosé again, please,
okay,
Jean.
It's called Traces, and you haven't got an A with 11, a C with the 78, and an S with the plant on it on the
sounds
label.
Sounds like the name of a romantic novel or something,
absolutely,
doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it's a clear glass bottle and it's got no caps.
Beautiful. For those who can't get enough of Princess Diana, her dance teacher is getting a biopic.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. So this production company has secured the rights to Dance with Diana, a memoir by Anne Allen. She's a Scottish-Canadian choreographer, worked with Princess Diana in Top Secret on dancing, which led to her performing this kind of legendary routine at Covent Garden, this routine to Uptown Girl. The whole thing with this is, I'm like, there obviously is an audience for someone, and there are royalists out there who will eat this up no matter what. But I'm like, how many iterations? Obviously, there's going to be an actor cast as Diana in this. I know she's not the entire focal point
hard
of
role
this
to
film.
Play.
Hard role to play, and we've had so many iterations of this previously. Yeah. You know what I mean? So sorry that I'm not super enthusiastic about
you
it.
Think
but
it's just doe eyes and a hairstyle, but there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, I think, but it's not. It's but I just like how many more iterations? We have Emma Karen, Elizabeth Debicki, Kristen Stewart.
There's Naomi Watts.
Watts. There is definitely someone else that I'm forgetting. Like, how many more times can we do this? You know,
loads is the answer there.
Yeah, but clearly.
loads and loads. Great. Look forward to it. Right. Thank you very much for that, Fionnuala, Jean, Olivia. Thank you very much indeed. Yeah. I don't know what happens next if any more survivors are outside from News Talk.
We'll
find
them.
See.
Thanks today
to the team: Caoimhe Harney, Niamh Harnell, Aidan McAlve, Simon Tierney, and Michael Quillen. Thank you very much for joining us.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief
with Marks and Spencer
on News Talk.